Hello and welcome to Cock Talk on National Public Radio with us, Click and Clack the Tappert Brothers. And we're broadcasting this week from Twin Swamps, Florida, spring training headquarters of the Grease Monkeys, Cock Talk's expansion Major League Baseball club.
Now pitching for the Grease Monkeys, Dog Bunky Berman.
Oh, he's a bum.
At least we don't pay him very much.
That's right. And speaking of worthless, you got any mail to read?
As a matter of fact, this is a good letter. This is from Joseph Ciliano, I pronounce it correctly, from Perry Street in NYC. Dear Tom and Ray, on a recent show, Beth called from Ossining, New York, while you were disparaging the quality of life in, quote, the city, of which I call my home, New York, and speculating on the viscosity of mockingbird poop. Remember that?
I do remember.
The technical term being guano.
Yes.
You failed to bite into the real meat of the problem. I don't like that metaphor. You two dummies were supplying mechanical answers to a biological problem. Uh-huh. I remember the problem. She used to park her car in a certain place. The pigeons used to come on the wires that were above the car and make a little mess on the hood of her car day after day.
Yes, yes. I remember it well.
In Manhattan, we have learned to deal with all species of birds and the guano they generate. When a foul fowl has perched in a place that is inconvenient to a knowing New Yorker, a smart guy will go out and buy himself a life-size plastic owl. Owls, because they are real tough predators, keep the other birds far away. The bad birds don't realize it's plastic, and they don't risk getting anywhere near it. I bet if Beth bought herself a plastic owl and stuck it on a pole in front of her parking spot, she wouldn't see a bird for 100 yards. Wow.
She probably wouldn't see the owl for more than 10 minutes before it got stolen.
Right. Well, I think he gave another mechanical answer to a biological problem, but nonetheless, it's very clever.
No, he solved it biologically.
Sure, and much more cleverly than we did.
Well,
whatever it was we suggested.
But he had time to think about it. I mean, that's our problem. We can't think. Anyway, if you'd like to talk to us, our number is 888-CAR-TALK. That's 1-888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, my name is Dana, and I'm calling from Smithville, Texas.
Hi, Dana.
What's on your mind?
Right before Christmas, my 1989 Honda Civic started overheating a lot. I mean, basically there were two problems, overheating and not starting on wet, cold mornings.
Huh.
So my husband, handy guy that he is, replaced the distributor cap.
Good.
And that helped with the starting, but we were still overheating, especially on the highway.
Hmm.
So, with the help of a friend's brother, who is a Peugeot mechanic, we finally identified our problem as a cracked radiator.
Sure, that's
good. We'd taken it to a cheap oil change place, and somebody had, looks like it put all his weight on top of our radiator and cracked it.
Oh, you want to blame the guy?
Oh, yeah.
At Quickie Lube.
I'm not naming names.
Yeah.
So we didn't want to buy a new radiator, so my husband had some JB Weld with him.
JB Weld. Amazing stuff.
And he super glued the crack together. And we've driven it another 6,000 miles since then.
Sure. Why not?
Okay. Well, here's my question. Am I driving a death trap? And what are the warning signs that my radiator is going to blow up? And should I go ahead and get a new radiator or keep driving this one until it breaks?
Well, how many miles are on this car?
158,000.
Wow.
I'd stick with the JB Weld. In fact, I'd lay another coat on top. I don't know what's in JB Weld, but one of my guys at the shop uses it to fix everything.
It does work.
It works.
Right.
Yeah.
Sole comes off your shoe, JB Weld. Break a wrench, JB Weld.
We fix the toilet with it.
Well, I mean, the worst that can happen is the weld lets go, and then you've got the same leak that you had before, and you'll overheat.
And then you go buy a new radiator.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think the leak is going to get worse when the weld lets go.
Oh, good.
So,
and it's not going to be a death trap. I mean, you may get stuck someplace, and you may get, you know, descended upon by armadillos or something. But...
yeah, or banditos. She does live in Texas.
Yeah.
Know.
Well, yeah, I mean, this leads to my secondary, and my biggest problem is that this car is sort of approaching second car status, and we need another car.
Yeah.
So we're having this major debate about what is next, and my husband wants a V8 big cab 4x4 with a flatbed trailer on the back. And I'm like, ugly? No way. I want, like, a foreign truck, something small, sporty, low gas mileage.
But you would go for, like, a Toyota pickup truck.
Yeah. Yeah. But he says that's not big enough.
Wait a minute. If he says not big enough for what?
Not manly enough. Not big enough for whatever.
I think it's whatever.
So it's not that it's not big enough to carry the 25 tons of manure that we have to haul back and forth. It's just not big enough, period. Because it's got to be big.
Right.
You know, I have to say that I am morally, ethically, and emotionally opposed to pickup trucks of all kinds, all sizes, all shapes. A pickup truck, unless you're picking up stuff, is a stupid way to travel.
No, because you may pick up stuff. For example, you're driving down the road.
You may pick up stuff.
It's trash day. Someone has put out on the curb a nice armoire. If you're driving your Suzuki Swift, you ain't picking up no stinking armoire.
That's true.
You have to go to the Ryder truck place, rent the truck. By the time you come back,
it's gone.
The guy with the 74 Scottsdale has picked it up.
And I'm tired of it. You know, there's like a rope on the back of my Honda, and last week he drove in the driveway with a dead pig hanging off the back of my car.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, he's talking like Dodge V10 with a dually.
Well, you know, there comes a time when you got to side with the guys.
To be fair, with his work, he does have need of a pickup.
Try to talk him into the Toyota.
Yeah.
I think.
I don't think so.
If not.
I think if he wants a V10 Ram, then that's what he's got to get.
No!
I do. I'm afraid that I never agree with anybody. But this one just feels right. I don't agree with anyone who wants to buy a manly, ridiculous pickup truck. But in this case, I have this feeling, unencumbered by the thought process, I have this feeling that this is very important, and I wouldn't fight it if I were you.
Well, I do respect instinct.
Yeah, well, I got it, man.
That's all he's got.
That's all I'm working on.
In fact, I got a note the other day from someone that said, your brother's comments are always insightful. I-N-C-I-T. Good luck, Dana.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
1-888-CAR-TALK or 1-888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, guys. This is Dennis in Louisville, Kentucky.
With one N or two?
With two N's.
Two N's.
Are there any N's in Louisville?
Just horses and bourbon, basically. So and not in that order.
What's happening, Dennis?
Okay, my wife has a 95 Nissan Altima, and occasionally I like to try to do nice things. And wash it, clean up the car.
Uh-huh.
The last two times I've done this, over the course of the last 6 months...
Pots have fallen off.
Been cold. I break the car.
What'd you break? I mean, what do you use to wash it with? Like a stick?
I don't know. But a friend said maybe it was too much fluoride in the water. I don't know. But here's what happens. I back it out of my garage, wash it in my driveway, crank it up, pull it back into the garage. The next morning she goes out to go to work, car won't start. Car will do it. Car won't start.
Ah, that kind of breaking of the car.
I got that.
First time it happened, called AAA. They put it on a flat truck, and they hauled it off to the Nissan dealership. We went back that evening, and the Nissan guy said, nothing wrong with this car. Can't figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
Happened again a couple of weeks ago. Pulled in, go out in the morning. Nothing happens.
I love it.
So I say, there's something wrong with this car. I'm not going to take it back to the Nissan guys. I'm going to take it to my gas station. The guys know what's going on.
Yeah, they know and love you.
Exactly.
Yeah.
They tell me basically the same thing. They call me at work. They say, hey, car starts. What's wrong? I said, car didn't start this morning. They said, okay, let us work around on it. So they replaced the distributor rotor, fuel filter, and the spark plug.
Good.
Car started good for them when they started this. Car started great for them when they finished this.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What am I doing wrong?
Have you washed the car since then?
I'm afraid to, guys. And my wife's not too picky about the dirts.
Well, here's what's happening.
Okay.
Do you close the garage
door?
Yeah,
he does.
Yes.
Yes, you do. We knew that.
You are loading up the car with moisture. And then you are driving the wet car into the garage and closing the door and leaving.
That's it.
It's like taking an apple and sticking it in a plastic bag, a Ziploc.
Okay. I got that visual.
And what's going to happen is the water is going to can't really leave the garage. And what it's doing is it's permeating. in my opinion, the faulty or worn-out spark plug wires that you have on this car.
Which they didn't replace. We were listening carefully for that on the list.
They replaced the plug, but not the wire.
Yeah, not the wires. And you are right at the time when you probably need wires.
And the reason that it started when the dealer got it is that the ride between your house and the dealership was enough to dry everything off. In fact, had you just opened the garage door or left the car outside after you washed it,
it would have started the next day.
Yeah.
So
you got a choice here. You can either have the spark plug wires replaced, or you can stop washing the car, or you can wash the car and not put it in the garage, or...
not shut off the engine. Leave the engine running while you're washing the car.
You can put it in the garage and leave the door open, or leave the engine running. You got a lot of choices here.
A lot of choices.
A lot of things you can do.
Okay, guys.
But I'm going to suggest that if you don't change the wires, the first day it gets left outside in the rain, it's not going to start either.
Oh.
You got to replace the wires, you cheapskate.
See you, Dennis.
I've already put $100. Okay, thanks a lot, guys.
All right.
Good luck, man.
Bye.
1-888-CAR-TALK or 1-888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Chris from Chicago.
Chris with a C-H-R-I-S?
Yep, that's it.
Okay, nice
that's
and simple.
Good and straightforward. What, none of this
what's going on, Chris?
Stuff.
Well, we have an 87 Volvo wagon.
Okay.
But what I wanted your opinion on was in a disagreement, my husband and I.
Which Volvo is it?
240.
Yeah, I don't know.
You don't
it's
know
not
what?
A 740.
Okay.
Okay.
All right, fine.
Well, you can tell me after this.
Okay.
But we're having this disagreement about saving street parking places, like with a broken lawn chair or with traffic cones.
Yeah.
But this is only after a snowstorm.
Oh, okay.
But see, we have really, it's really tough parking in the winter when there's a lot of snow. And,
yeah, sure.
So people, you know, they dig out and then they save it. And my husband says it's not a good idea. Kind of, you know, trashy. But I think after you dig out, you know, like a foot and a half of snow, that...
the spot's yours.
Yeah.
It should be. I mean, I thought that in the city, this was a given.
Well, you know, interestingly, in our fair city, we have a similar problem. And for years, the rule was, the unwritten rule, obviously, was you shovel it, you own it.
Yeah.
And just to ensure that, people used to put things like, you know,
all
lawn chairs, trash barrels, you know, undetonated bombs, you know,
yeah,
any number of things in those spots. But because the neighborhoods have changed so much in our fair city, it no longer applies.
You think not?
Oh, I know not.
Oh.
I know not. And our buddy Pep lives in Cambridge, and it used to be that you shovel out a spot, you owned it.
Yeah.
You shovel out a spot now, it's anybody's.
Yeah, but it gets ugly if you move someone's lawn chair.
Oh, yeah, no, that's verboten.
Well, I mean, if it's sitting, if the
especially spot... if he's in it.
But if the spot is there and there's nothing designating...
But you didn't shovel it.
Well, it doesn't matter. I mean, you may have just been visiting someone for the night.
Right.
And you came out in the morning, you had to dig yourself out, and you live 25 miles away. When you leave, it's anybody's. The only way you designate that it is not anybody's is the lawn chair.
I don't think you can legally claim anything.
Legal schmeagle! It doesn't matter what's legal and what's not legal.
Slash your tires!
Well, that's the whole point. I mean, in the north end of Boston, where I go every day.
I think I need to. Go ahead.
I mean, this is a given. I mean, not only is it when there's snow, but they now have taken this to a whole new level.
Yeah.
For example, my buddy Richie, who owns the pizza shop, he needs a place to park his Harley.
Yeah.
So if he leaves for a few minutes, he's got, don't ask us where he got them. You know those highway barrels with the flashing lights?
Yeah, yeah.
He's got two of them.
Oh, yeah.
He takes them out, he puts them there in the parking space. He's going to take up a whole parking space for his Harley.
Oh, yeah.
Because you got to have enough room to park horizontally. You don't want to park sticking out like that.
No, that's day class A.
So, I mean, it's a given now, at least in the north end, that if you want the spot, you just put anything there to designate. And if you violate the lawn chair law, you can just kiss your tires goodbye. So
So the question is, should you move up from an 87 Volvo, considering where you live? And the answer is no. Is that your question?
I guess it could be. Yeah.
I mean, the question could be, is it okay to do this? Is it morally, ethically correct?
That's a good way to put it. Is it morally, ethically okay to do it?
Well, see, in the North End, those questions don't come up.
Right.
It's simple.
And those who question disappear.
You want your tires or you don't want your tires.
And it's very easy to look at it objectively if you don't live there.
Right.
But if you live there, I think the law of the jungle has to apply.
Yeah.
The law of the jungle. See, I think that if it snows and you shovel out and you put the lawn chair, then it's an absolute given.
It's your spot.
It's your spot. So
to really answer your question, you want to have the oldest car possible with the worst tires imaginable.
Well, I don't even know what kind of car I have. So
you don't even know what you got.
I don't even know what.
I forgot. Who's on which side? You're the one who wants to leave out the chair?
I do because, you know, I'm the one with, like, you know, my daughter and the bags of groceries.
And exactly.
Of course. No, you're 100% right, Chris. Tell your husband he's completely off base on this one.
Okay.
And you love him very much, but tell him to shut up.
Okay. I will.
See you, Chris.
Thanks a lot.
Bye-bye.
Okay, bye.
Hey, I get to ask you this question this week. Do you remember last week's puzzler?
Yes, it was about fishes and triplicate.
Very good. I mean, do you know the answer?
Well, of course I do.
Would you be willing to share it with your sweet older brother? Because I don't know the answer.
Drop dead, piston puss.
We'll be back in a minute. And even though radio station managers remind their staffs to move the clocks ahead during our show whenever they hear us say it, this is NPR.
Hi, this is Morning Edition co-host David Green. And the truth is, I don't even like cars, with one exception, the cars you guys donate to us. Did you know that your old car can be turned into Morning Edition, All Things Considered, or Wait, Don't Tell Me? Kind of makes you like cars, doesn't it? Turn your car into the programs you love. Here's how to do it.
For more information, visit the Car Talk Vehicle Donation Program at cartalkvdp.com. Hi, we're back. You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Clack, the Tapper Brothers, and we're here to discuss cars, car repair, and the answer to last week's very, very good puzzler.
I didn't make it up.
No, it is. Oh, this was... top drawer, man.
I like it. Here it is. Three guys go out fishing, and they decide they're going to split whatever catch there is. This is in a boat. They're deep sea fishing. They collect a bunch of fish. They throw them on the deck. And they decide they're going to divvy up everything the next morning. So they pull into the dock. They sit there, and they have a few beers, and they sleep the night away. In the boat. However, in the middle of the night, one of the guys has severe cramps and decides he's not going to stay the night. He's going to go home and he wants some Pepto-Bismol. So he says, I'll take my third. He goes onto the deck. He counts the fish and says, not divisible by three. He throws one of the fish overboard, takes his third, and he leaves. An hour later, one of the other guys wakes up and realizes that he's got to be up real early tomorrow morning to go to a meeting. He can't stay on the boat all night. He says, I'll take my third and I'll go home. So he looks, he counts the fish and says, oops, not divisible by three, throws one fish overboard, takes his third and leaves. The other guy wakes up 7 o'clock in the morning. He doesn't know the other two guys have gone, but he decides, well, it's time to leave. He looks at the fish. He looks, counts them, throws one overboard and says, here's my third, and he leaves also.
And no fish are left except the two-thirds.
No, the fish that are left, he's figuring he's leaving the other guys, their two-thirds.
Their third apiece.
Yeah.
Got it.
So everyone did the same thing. And the question simply was, what is the smallest number, the fewest number of fish by which this could happen? That each guy does the same thing and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And? And? Now what? And I give the answer?
It's
as simple as that? Well, I mean, you could do it simply by trial and error. Just keep trying numbers. There is this little equation, which was in the book that I read, and I can't remember where I got this puzzle because I lost the book. But I did remember the equation, and it was very simple. It was said y equals 2/3 parenthesis x minus 1. So that y is what you end up with, x is what you start with, mm-hmm. and you keep plugging in numbers for x, what you start with, until you can solve that equation 3 times without running into non-integers. And that doesn't happen until you get to 25.
Wow. So they caught
25 fish. The first guy tosses one overboard because you can't divide 25 by 3. That's 24. He takes his third, which is 8. That leaves 16 fish. The next guy comes. He can't divide 16 by 3.
Throws one overboard.
There's 15.
I can see it's beginning to play out.
Right? He takes 5. That leaves 10 fish. The third guy shows up in the morning. There's 10 fish. He thinks he's dividing it again into 3s. He can't divide it by 3. He throws one fish overboard, takes his 3, leaving 6 fish on the deck.
To rot. And attract flies.
And attract flies, and God knows what kind of evil vermin. But the answer is that they caught 25 fish. Who's our winner, Ramey?
Our winner this week.
Wait, is this some kind of a sneaky plot to get me to do more work?
We tried. It's hopeless. Our winner this week is Constantine Roussos from Arlington, Virginia, and for having his correct answer selected at random from among all the correct answers, Constantine will get a $25 gift certificate to the Car Talk Shameless Commerce Division, with which he can pick up a Car Talk baseball hat. Don't forget, spring training is right around the corner, and it's going on right now.
It is.
The baseball season is right around the corner, and you don't want to burn your noggin while you're sitting in the bleachers, do you?
No, I want one of those Car Talk baseball hats, man. $25?
Well, no.
You can get a couple of them for $25, can't you?
You get one and a third.
One and an extra visor.
Yeah,
that's good.
Anyway, we'll have a new, and I have a bunch of puzzlers here, and I don't really know, so I can't give a description.
I may come up with one again.
Who knows? You may just have a flash.
I may have a flash.
Anyway, we'll have a new puzzler coming up in the third half of today's show, so stay tuned for that. In the meantime, you can call us and ask us any question you'd like, even a question about your car. The number is 1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 1-888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hello.
Hi, who's this?
My name's Dr. Anastas Pass. I'm calling from Houston, Texas.
Dr. Anastas.
Yes, you heard that correctly, Anastas.
Yeah.
We got it. Okay, Doc, from Houston.
Yes.
What's up?
Wait a minute, Doc. Are you a real doctor?
Yes.
Are you one of those phony PhDs?
He is a real doctor.
How could you tell? His voice.
Yes.
His voice.
Yes.
You could tell, couldn't you?
Right.
What are you a doctor of, Doctor?
I'm an optometrist.
You're not a real doctor.
Hey.
If I fell down and needed stitches, could you give them to me?
Yes.
Oh, sure I could.
You're a doctor.
Yeah, you're good enough. Anyway, Doc, what's on your mind?
I have a question here. Let me give you a little bit of history. Right now I'm involved in a research project over at Johnson Space Center at NASA on telecommunications. I'm sorry, telemedicine.
Yeah.
And I'm going to be involved in another project involving the KC-130, lovingly called the Vomit Comet, where you go up in the plane and you take 40 hyperbolas and you go weightless.
Right. Really?
And we're going to be looking at fluid dynamics. We're going to be looking at perfusion pressures within the vascular tunic of the eye and blood flow within the eye.
Oh, I know the kind several of fluid things. Dynamics that I'd be involved in if I were in that thing. Anyway, I'm sorry.
Anyway, to keep my mind off of being sick, I thought of this question, which has absolutely no practical value, and I immediately thought of you two.
And, thanks.
Well, you're welcome. And being mechanically challenged and knowing nothing about cars, I didn't know who else to turn to. So the project is, when I'm up in this jet, I'll be weightless.
Yes.
Periodically. And I was thinking that if I took my Audi 90, which I love, or my wife's Miata, would the car function in zero G? And if it doesn't, and my guess is that it probably wouldn't, how many places would it fail? how many places in the combustion process
would
it fail?
What a great puzzler.
Yeah, traction would be lousy.
Traction would be lousy, but the question is,
would the engine run?
The engine run.
Yeah, right.
Well, as long as you have air.
Well, yeah, it's not a vacuum.
Oh, no, in fact,
no, it's not a vacuum.
There's plenty of air.
There's plenty of air. So my first, without thinking, guess would be it's going to run fine. Now, the thing I'm worried about is not gasoline, however, but oil.
No, it would run, but it wouldn't make any difference how long it ran. You just want to know if it would run? Sure.
It would run, but...
These cars have fuel injection, which means the fuel is pumped to the injectors under pressure. Even though there's less than, probably somewhat less than atmospheric, or maybe not. The thing is, the cabin is pressurized.
Right.
It would run pretty... Does it have to run upside down?
Well, it doesn't make any difference.
Doesn't matter. There's no gravity, so it is upside down all the time, which means...
No, what do you mean it's upside down?
Well, it's nothing. It's neither upside down or otherwise.
No. In the frame of reference of the Earth, is it upside down or right side up?
It's irrelevant.
It isn't irrelevant.
Of course it's irrelevant. There's no gravity.
That doesn't make any... No,
there's no gravity. At the point when there's zero gravity.
Right.
What does it matter where the hell the Earth is?
It matters.
It doesn't matter. And the only thing you need gravity for is to get the oil back down from the valve train back down to the sump. And you can't do that. Therefore, the oil pump is going to go dry. And that's it. It'll run for 30 seconds.
Take your wife's car.
That's what I think.
There's no problem with the gasoline.
I don't believe so.
At the point of the fuel tank.
You know, unfortunately,
well, maybe at the point of the fuel tank, there may be a problem. The gasoline would wind up, unless the tank were full to the tippity top,
right.
All the gasoline under weightlessness would grab
floating.
It, would levitate to the top, and the pickup tube would be at the bottom where there is no gas. So that might be a problem.
Well, but unless it were, that would only be a problem if the gas tank were relatively empty.
But if it were upside down, it wouldn't be a problem. See, it does make a difference.
That's right. It does make a difference.
Yeah. Well,
so if the gas tank were relatively full, only as full as the distance from the bottom of the tank to the bottom of the pickup tube, which is half an inch, then it runs. But only for a minute, because then it runs out of oil.
So there would be a problem then at the pickup point of the gasoline and then in the oil. Nowhere else in the line or...
Well, I mean, that's our considered 30-second opinion.
Yeah, I mean...
My question is, what the hell is telemedicine? Is it like car talk? What do you mean, telemedicine?
Telemedicine.
That means the astronauts will call you up and say, hey, Dr. Anastas, I got this problem. And you say, what color shirt are you wearing?
We're seeing patients in Boulder, Colorado at the Johnson Space Center.
Oh, that kind of telemedicine.
They uplink to the satellite, which was launched.
Oh, I thought you were using, like, the Hubble telescope. Open wide! Cough!
Oh, so you actually have an audio-visual link.
Exactly. We can evaluate the patients real time. We can do specialized testing, ultrasound, and see everything real time. And the idea is if you've got a patient in East Out of Nowhere, Montana, they can uplink to this satellite system and downlink to any specialized, highly specialized medical center and have access to the best medical minds in the world.
But you have to be weightless to do this, huh?
No, it doesn't have anything to be...
That's a separate project.
No.
Oh, I was
just
curious.
Something else completely.
Okay.
Well, you can see and you can hear the patient, but what do you do when you want him to cough?
Well, there's some other doctors on the other
line. I've got it. Never mind.
Hey, thanks for calling.
You're welcome.
See you, Doc.
See you later.
Have fun.
Hey, that was a good question, by the way. I hope our answer was
close. I'm sure that one of our many listeners has written a doctoral dissertation on this very subject.
Yeah.
So
you never know.
When we receive it in the mail, we'll read it to you. Bye-bye.
What? I think he left.
1-888-CAR-TALK or 1-888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Yes, hi. I want to wish you all a very, 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 very wonderful radio show from all the Caribbeans in Europe. My name is Eleonora Terrelonge-Griffith.
Eleonora?
Terrelonge?
Griffith.
Griffith. And everyone calls me TG.
TG. TG is good.
But Eleonora is a beautiful name.
Thank you.
And where in the Caribbean are you from? That's the first question. Well, I'll give you all the questions. Second question is it Caribbean or is it Caribbean? And the third question is, where in Europe are you calling from? And the fourth question is, how'd you get there and why are you there?
Right. If we have any time left in the show, We'll answer your car question too, TG.
This is wonderful. First of all, I was born in Panama.
Yeah.
I was raised in Costa Rica.
Yeah.
And I've been in Europe for the last 24 years.
Where?
In Germany.
No kidding.
No. It's great.
Wait, there were four questions.
Yes.
Why are you there?
We say Caribbean.
You say Caribbean.
There were five questions. Why are you in Europe?
Why? I was in Europe.
Yeah.
I was in Europe because I worked for the Department of Defense.
Oh, you're not in Europe now?
No, I'm in Washington, D.C., the capital.
Oh, spy.
Witness Protection
spy.
Program.
Spy. Yeah. I think so. Yeah.
No.
But we'll talk to you anyway. That's okay. We like spies.
Do you? Well,
what do we
the
care?
Education activity branch is what I work for. I think.
Oh, that's education activity. Come on. Education activity branch.
Oh,
hey,
if you went from Costa Rica to Germany, you would be the spy who
came into the cold.
Into the cold.
Exactly.
Or out of the heat, I was going to say. Yeah. So you're now in D.C.
I am now in D.C. in Arlington.
Yeah, cool. Yeah.
So why are you calling us?
Well, I'm calling you, first of all, because I've listened to you for the last umpteen years in Germany, and I've laughed my head off every single time and found some very valuable information by listening to your talk show.
Must have been listening to Michael Feldman. you must have us confused.
Come on, Eli. You've got something wrong here.
Yeah.
No. You see, about 20 years ago, actually it's about 22 years ago, I bought a Volkswagen.
Yeah.
I have a Volkswagen Beetle. And it's a VW 1302 1971. Actually, it's a 70 with parts from 71.
Oh, you bought this in Germany?
Yes.
Yeah.
And I'm really happy with it. I've had it redone completely rust-free. Every 7 years, it goes through this jaunder where it needs some body work.
Mm-hmm.
You start to notice these little puckers around the doors.
Yeah.
And then the siding between that and the fenders and the body.
Yeah.
And I don't know what to do to get the rust to stop. And not only that, to find somebody who can do this.
Well, the rust won't stop. I mean, it's never going
to
stop.
The only way to stop the rust is to cut it all out. And I mean, you can't grind it out. You can't shout it out.
Hmm.
You can't do anything. You have to actually cut it out with either a torch.
Yeah.
Or a saw of some kind.
Depending on the severity. I mean, if it's just these little bubbles as you describe them.
Right.
Well, if you don't want the bubbles to come back.
Right.
Then, you know, the remedy of grinding it down until the metal is shiny and then painting it and filling it in.
Yeah.
Works for several years. I mean, in Arlington, Virginia, it will work longer than it did in Germany.
Why?
It doesn't snow as much in Arlington.
No.
So maybe, I don't know, the vegetation is greener.
Oh, no. I'm trying to find a body shop that would do a reasonably priced job.
Well, you need to find a restorer. You need to find a restoration shop. You don't want to find a body shop.
No.
Because body shops are interested in doing production work. They get the thing in, they fix it up, they get you out, and they collect your money. You want someone who's going to restore it, and you need to go to our website.
Uh-huh.
And look at the mechanics files.
Mechanics, okay.
Well, the other thing you can do is log on to the Volkswagen Car Club of America site.
The Volkswagen, I've heard of them. They were in Germany, actually.
Yeah.
What are the Car Club of America doing in Germany? They're a bunch of nutcases like you that have old Volkswagens and probably know where to get them restored. And they probably know the best people in your area. So that's what I'd do, I think.
Well, that'll work. That will definitely work.
All right. See you, TG.
I really, really appreciate talking to you guys.
Leonora, it's a pleasure to talk to you.
Thanks for your call. Bye-bye.
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 All right, Tommy. It's time for us to take a little break, wouldn't you say?
Come on. Aren't you sick of being ruled by the clock? I mean, that's why I left the corporate world. I'm a free spirit. I couldn't live by the clock. All right, that's why they threw me out of the corporate world.
As I thought, we'll be back with the new puzzler and more of your car questions in just a minute.
You know that I need new brake shoes. You know that I just got fired. That is why I say to you, crank that jack a little higher. Come on, baby, change my tire. Come on, baby.
maybe change my tire. Please don't light my car on fire.
And even though Facebook automatically asks our friends, are you sure you still want to do this? Whenever we say it, this is NPR.
Hey, if you'd like to hear more Car Talk.
Yeah, like if your cable box broke and you can't watch anything other than C-SPAN.
You can download hundreds of classic Car Talk shows.
And by classic, we mean
old. Previously aired.
Exactly.
<you know.
laughs> Just go to cartalk.com and click where it says, listen to the show. Ha! We're back. You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers, and we're here to discuss cars, car repair, and the new Puzzler.
I can hardly wait, Ollie.
Well, this is very brief. Mm-hmm. And I'll try to obfuscate as much as possible.
Yeah, go right ahead.
My son was performing a common household task. Okay, mm-hmm. You satisfied with that?
I like that, yeah.
He asked me, is 50 enough? No, I said, I don't think so.
Yeah.
He said, what about 125? Mm. I said, no, I don't think that's enough either. I'd try 90.
What?
There you go. This is a common household task, which most of us, I would say,
have performed,
have engaged in many times.
50, not enough.
He says, is 50 enough?
No.
I said, I don't think so.
How about 125? No, I don't think so. Try 90.
And he says, okie doke.
Did it work?
Well, no, 90 wasn't enough either, actually.
So that's it, and the question is, what was he doing?
What was he doing? What household task
could he possibly have been doing for this little conversation
to have taken place and to be correct?
This little exchange, as we say.
Indeed. Now, if you think you know the answer, write it on the back of a $20 bill and send it to Puzzler Tower, Car Talk Plaza, Box 3500, Harvard Square, Cambridge.
Our fair city.
Matt 02238. Or you can email your answer to us from cartalk.com. If you'd like to call us, the number is 1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Kim Von Miller from Austin, Texas.
Kim from
Kim.
Austin. One of my favorite towns in the whole world.
Oh, you guys are celebrities here.
We are?
We are?
Yeah.
Yeah, would they put us up? So, what's cooking?
I called y'all because nobody can answer my question.
Ah, okay.
There's absolutely nothing wrong with my car.
Cool.
Okay, well, thanks for calling, Kim. It's been a lot of fun.
Now, listen, you're going to laugh.
Yeah.
I have this curiosity that's eating me up. You drive down the road, and you see these model letters on the cars.
Yeah.
Now, good. I have a 98 Mazda Protege LX.
Uh-huh.
But I've also seen a car that looks just like mine that's LS.
Mm-hmm.
And so I start looking, and I'm thinking, well, is my car nicer than the others, or is my car less? You know,
is this an ascending order or descending order? LX. X is way down the end of the alphabet. Or is this maybe Roman numerals?
Right, but it doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
Can you answer my question?
Well.
Can you give me any specific information?
We're going to try to help you as much as we can here, Kim. We wrote a newspaper column on the subject of, on this subject.
This very subject.
For one thing.
Uh-huh.
And to be perfectly frank with you, I don't remember a thing that we said.
Well, I don't remember that there was any specific rhyme or reason to it.
We know that.
That one manufacturer's LS, if that means, for example, if the LS is the top of the line for your car.
Uh-huh.
And you can't assume that if you go to a Toyota, that an LS is going to be the top of the line for their car.
Of course. I mean, first of all,
right.
You have to realize that these letters mean absolutely nothing except what the manufacturer decides that they will mean.
That was my theory.
And what they mean, for example, the LX subliminally suggests luxury. Got it?
Yeah, we think that they're working on subliminal things completely with all of these letters.
Okay,
and
about,
it's obvious, like, for example, like the SX, we know what that means.
Yeah.
But more importantly, all of these letters are designed to trick and fool the buying public, which is what advertising people are very good at in my humble opinion.
That was my
theory. Only
thing
that they're good at, in my humble opinion.
Making you think you're buying something that you ain't really buying.
Yeah. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah,
okay.
Like, for example, you live in Austin, TX. Now, is that good or bad?
Right.
I mean, we don't know. I mean, is that better than DE?
Texas is the nicest place.
No,
or DC.
How about MA? How about NFL? I mean, we don't know. There's no way to know.
Yeah.
I think the deeper you go into the alphabet, the more creature comforts you're getting.
Yeah, but stay away from DC, whatever you do. Because
what is DC?
Evil. It's evil.
Washington, DC. Well, anyway, Kim, I'm sure that we helped you.
And you have certainly raised another question worthy of a doctoral dissertation.
Well, thank you.
So there's some kid in Northwestern right now who's dying to get a doctoral dissertation topic.
See?
And he's in the marketing department, and you have just given him an idea that's going to get him through, get him his doctorate so he can teach somewhere and perpetuate all this BS that is going around.
That would be an interesting model. The BS.
The BS. Yeah, BS is good.
Well, guys, it's been fun. Thanks very much.
See you later.
Bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. 1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
This is Mike in Lafayette, Louisiana.
How you doing, Mike?
Oh, pretty good.
So what's shaking, Mike?
Well, I've got a 95 Dodge three-quarter ton van, and my son and I are having a little disagreement about what to do. He worked as a mechanic for a couple of years, and there's a noise coming from the rear of the truck that's like a high-pitched whine that we've pretty much determined is the fuel pump.
Oh, really? So you hear the noise even when you're not moving?
Right. And for some unforsaken reason, I don't know why they do this, you know, the fuel pump is inside the gas tank.
Where else? I mean, why?
I just don't get it.
Yeah.
So,
well, it's to discourage guys like you, Mike, from replacing their own fuel pumps.
Well, that's what I want to do. And the discussion between my son and I is to, my idea was to put an electric fuel pump, just bolt one up along the frame, like, you know, cut it into the line and hook it up to the same wires that ran the other pump.
Oh, boy. Yeah, no, I cannot do.
Really?
No, you can't. I mean, you could if you could find a fuel pump that had the same characteristics, i.e. delivered the same pressure and volume as the pump that's in the tank.
Uh-huh.
But the chances of doing that are pretty small, and I think it's risky. And I think you need to drop the tank and put the real pump in there, which is not cheap, by the way.
No.
But this is certainly within your grasp, don't you think?
You can do it.
I mean, we can do it.
Your son has the tools.
I have them.
Yeah, you don't need much in the way of tools to do this.
No, a couple of wrenches.
Yeah, and the pump is right in the top of the tank.
Yeah.
Now, you would think, and I hate to be a complainer, but you would think that most manufacturers would, if they had the opportunity, make a hole in the floor of the truck, which would be right above where the fuel pump is.
Wouldn't that be nice? Why do you have to take the tank out?
Well, you know, this is a utility van. I use it for my business, you know.
Oh, it's a van.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it would be relatively easy. You could do this.
I got a saw.
Yeah. Don't do it with the torch.
No, that plastic tank just doesn't handle a torch too well.
No, but I mean, you might want to take it out the first time just to see where it is. But as soon as you do, get right in there with the magic marker. Make yourself a nice big circle. And while the tank is out, what better time? I would use a Sawzall.
I've got a jigsaw. That works just fine.
That'll be good. And then you just cut yourself out a little circle there. And if you wanted to, you could get fancy and put a little handle on it. Or just leave it there.
Right.
How many miles you have in this thing now? 100,000?
About 80.
80.
You'll be doing this again.
Yeah, so you might want to make a hole. I mean, I certainly would if I owned one of these.
Uh-huh.
But it's not that hard to take the tank out. I think it'll be a nice father-son project.
Oh, bonding experience. It's bonding, man.
See you, Mike.
Well, thank you all very much.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye.
1-888-CAR-TALK or 1-888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Ann from Portland, Oregon.
What's up, Ann?
Well, last weekend I went up to the mountains to go snowboarding with my friends. And when I snowboarded all day long, I came out to the car, and it's a Saab, and I got in and started driving down the hill.
Now, wait a minute. What's the big deal about snowboarding? I mean, skiing's bad enough.
Yeah. Have you got room for one more? Because we have a guy here who'd like to go with you. He loves this skiing and snowboarding stuff. Doug Mayer,
sure.
Who is part of the crack staff here, has been on crutches for about 2 years now from a skiing accident. And you know that this guy has the mental capacity. I mean, first of all, the fact that he works with us tells you something.
He has diminished mental capacity right off.
He can hardly wait to get back on skis again.
Right, and he's going to go. No, actually, he's not going to go to skiing. He's going to go right to snowboarding because you really only need one leg for that. His other leg is useless.
Do you mind if I interrupt you for a second, Andy? Because I happen to have here a note from someone that is relative to this.
Uh-huh. Relevant?
Relevant, that's the word.
There you go.
A doctor, Dr. Chris Kerr, gave us definitions. I just wonder which one is Mayer. An idiot is a person without understanding of ordinary mental capacity and does not advance beyond the age of 3 years.
That could be him.
An imbecile.
Uh-huh.
Who is weak is a person who is weak-minded yet not incapable of education.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. I don't think that's Doug.
No. A moron.
It could be a moron.
Is a feeble-minded person of higher grade than an imbecile, one who does not advance beyond the mental age of about 12 years.
Ah.
I think we're going to give him the benefit of the doubt and call him a moron.
I think so, too.
I think he might be a moron. I'm sorry, Ann. All right.
So there you were snowboarding.
So there we are. We're snowboarding, and you get back in the Saab.
Right, and I didn't chain up. There wasn't that. There was just slush on the ground.
Yeah.
Okay, so I start driving down the hill, and it felt like I had no control over my back right tire, and it just felt like I was sliding all over the place, and I could only go about 15 miles an hour without, like, ending up into a snowbank or something.
You were driving on ice.
Slush.
Well, it didn't seem like it was that icy.
Yeah.
Okay.
And pretty soon there's a pile of cars in back of me, so I pull over to the side of the road.
They're all honking the horn, of course, telling me to go faster.
Well, they weren't honking. They were more polite, but
gesturing.
They were pressuring me.
Pressuring you.
Pressuring you.
And so I pull over, and my tire, I get out of the car to see what's going on, see if there's something wrong, and my tire's on fire with all the smoke coming out of it.
So these guys behind you, they just wanted you to pull over. They didn't bother to say, and by the way, your car's on fire?
No, they didn't.
It's great, isn't it? Life is good. Yeah.
So I got back in, drove the car, and it felt fine. It felt like I had control over the tires again. So we got back in the car, and we drove 5 miles down the hill.
Wait. You didn't change the tire?
No.
They just waited for the fire to go out.
Uh-huh.
I'm with you, Ann.
I love it.
So we got back down to we drove like 5 miles, got out of the car. There's no fire, no smoke. And so we just decided to drive back to town, which is like a 60-mile mm-hmm. drive. And I had no problems.
Now, when you say the tire was on fire.
From inside. Like, I could see it if I looked inside the hubcap.
You could see flames?
Yes.
And you didn't think to, like, run like hell?
No, she had to get home. Come on.
I'm just curious. My first reaction would have been, I mean, if I didn't know anything.
To go, yeah.
Which it
there's
seems
a, there's a, there are flames very close to the gas tank. And I'm going to just hang around and wait for the fire to go out. You are some vehemence there, Ann, you know?
Well, the person in the back seat, she wasn't very enthusiastic about getting back.
See, I mean, it sounds to me, although I haven't got it all figured out yet, like your brake caliper in the right rear there was stuck on. But I don't know where the flames are coming from.
Well, the flames could only come from either brake fluid.
Hmm.
Which burn.
Which does burn.
Or grease from the wheel bearing.
Ah.
And that's pretty much it back there.
Yeah. See, if the brakes are stuck on,
mm-hmm.
the car is moving, and you're getting tremendous heat from the friction.
Mm-hmm.
Which would also explain the peculiar handling.
Oh, yeah. That was obviously what the crazy handling was, because that brake was on.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess my brother's theory is that grease or brake fluid caught fire.
It was a small flame, was it not?
Yes. It wasn't tremendous.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So should I take it into the shop?
Well, I mean
yeah.
Do what you like. Of course you're going to take it in. I don't know what happened to make the rest of the journey uneventful.
Yeah, I can't explain that.
Although I can only imagine that somehow or another the caliper freed itself up.
and then you were able to drive normally after that.
Uh-huh.
So, I guess, I mean, you showed great poise and courage and, what do you call it?
Idiocy.
Yeah, but definitely have someone look at it. Don't drive it unless you're driving it directly to the repair shop.
And
tell them the whole story.
Anytime your car catches fire anywhere, the first thing you do is run like hell. Unless you have a fire extinguisher and you want to be courageous.
Well, hopefully that won't happen again.
But I would start carrying one, like on your hip. See you, Ann.
Yeah, good
Get
for
it
you,
checked
Ann.
Out.
Okay.
How did the snowboarding go? Was it fun?
Oh, yes.
Can you take Doug Mayo with you next time you go?
Sure.
Okay, we'll ship him out.
Okay.
Thanks.
Okay.
Thanks See for ya. Calling. Bye-bye.
And they can ship him back in a body cast. Well, you've wasted an otherwise perfectly good hour listening to Car Talk. Our esteemed producer is Doug the Subway Fugitive, not a slave to fashion, Berman. Our associate producers are David the Calves of Belleville Green and Catherine Frau Blucher Fenelosa. Our web lackey is Doug the Old Gray Mare, assisted by Connie Bridgeford. Our engineer is John Cartman Parati. Our theme music is by David Dog Grisman. And our technical, spiritual, and menu advisor just back from his triumph at the Manitoba March Madness Manicotti Munja Feast is John Bugsy Lawler. Our public opinion pollster is Paul Murky of Murky Research, assisted, of course, by statistician Marge Inovera. Our document security expert from the island of Jamaica is Euripides Upman, not related to our tailor, Euripides Imenides, or to our staff bouncer, Euripides I Break Your Face, or to the proprietor of our men's clothing shop, Euripides Euonides. Our divorce attorney is Carmine Not Yours. Our credit counselor is Max Stout. Our assistant disciplinarian is Joaquin DePlanc. Joaquin, our meteorologist from the New Delhi office is Luke Outavindo. Then there's our Russian staff. Our chauffeur is Pikoff and Dropoff. Our mechanic is Wyatt Stalin. And the banker at Car Talk Poker Games is Nikolai Putin. And, of course, our seat cushion tester is Mike Easter. Our chief counsel from the law firm of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe is Hugh Lewis Dewey, known to the gifted and talented squirrels in Harvard Square as Huey Louie Dewey. Thanks so much for listening. We're Click and Clack, the Tappet Brothers. Don't drive like my brother.
Don't drive like my brother. And my sister wants to come on the show and say, don't drive like either of my brothers, because she doesn't trust us.
There's a story in this which we'll have to tell next week. We'll be back next week. Bye-bye. You can get a podcast of this show, which is number 1510. Download other episodes and check out our fashion backwards Car Talk clothing and CD collections all over at cartalk.com, where you can also get answers to your car questions. I know it seems unlikely from Car Talk, but lurking on the Car Talk community pages are real mechanics who actually know something. So if you have a question, try it out. Car Talk community over at cartalk.com. Car Talk is a production of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe and WBUR in Boston.
And even though villages everywhere invite us to apply for the idiot position whenever they hear us say it, this is NPR.